It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Throughout last week and over the weekend, the Green Party has been a strong presence at Huatau, standing with Mana Whenua and supporting the protection of their land. The party has also welcomed the government decision to undertake an intensive review of the Resource Management Act to protect our environment and prioritise quality of life. And they have celebrated 100 members signing to the Climate Leaders Coalition. I spoke to Green Party co-leader James Shaw about these issues and began by asking what the Green Party's stance is on the protection of Ihu Matau.
Well, basically we've been saying for some time now, and in fact Maram has been working on this for a few years now, to say that we need to be paying attention to what it is that the Soul group have been saying. That there's this kind of inevitability to this whole process, which we were trying to head off at the pass, to say we need to try and find a mediated outcome. And what I find kind of unfortunate is that the events of the last week were, frankly, almost inevitable without that kind of mediated outcome.
So obviously you've said that Marama had been talking about this for some time, but how long has the Green Party as a whole had this position and been acting on it?
In general, when it comes to the treaty settlement process, we have always said that we felt that the way that the Crown conducts it, which is this idea of large natural groupings and the system of mandates and so on, is set up for the Crown's convenience, not for Māori. and so every time there's a settlement, you get these these sort of conflicts that sort of crop up around the edges that kind of manifest differently in pretty much every location around the country. But because of the way the Crown conducts its negotiations, it keeps those issues alive. So in the case of Ihu Matau, we're not saying that the we respect the mandate of the iwi and we respect the treaty settlement that took place. But what we're saying is that those other groups also need, the kind of to have been in a conversation with the Crown, and they weren't.
Do you think that that's position of the Crown, the way that the law is set up regarding settlements, filters through into New Zealanders' understanding of what that is, and then it filters into the way the media reports about it as well, which is also just impacting the way that people think about the issue and learn things about the issue. Do you think this is something that's going to be able to be changed, or do you think that it's not very likely with Ihu Matau and we'll just have to wait till next time?
If you look at the overall process, I do hope that things like Ihu Matau can lead to changes in the way that we do things in the future. I think that there is a bit of a shift occurring. You've got the new Māori Crown Relations Agency, Te Arawhiti, which is looking at the changing nature of the relationship between the Crown and Māori. And I think all of those are positive developments. So I think that there is some sense that change is happening and change can happen.
Just with the way that it's going at the moment, does the Green Party have any power to do anything about the government's final decision on protecting Ihu Matau?
We're sort of in this confidence and supply arrangement with the government, which means that we're kind of half in the tent and half out of it. And so we've obviously got a relationship with ministers and with the Prime Minister, and we've been using that relationship to kind of try and make these points. But we don't have kind of direct control of the agencies that are responsible for it. Our position really is around trying to use our influence and to kind of be that voice for trying to find a mediated outcome.
So let's move on to changes to the RMA. Why does there need to be a review of the Resource Management Act?
Well, you know, I think there isn't anyone who doesn't have a beef with CRMA at some level. I mean, environmentalists don't like it because it's incredibly expensive for them to take court cases through, and because generally it's sort of stacked against them, and, you know, it actually doesn't do all that effective a job of protecting the environment as it should. You know, developers, you know, hate it because it snarls things up and, you know, planning sort of stages for, you know, often years and years at a time. You know, I mean, it's just, it's sort of one of those things that kind of has a bad rap from everyone. And it's become massively unwieldy. I mean, it's almost twice as long. In fact, I think it's over
huge.
Twice as long.
Yeah,
that's right. Something like 700 pages. And I think it was 300 pages when it was first passed 30 years ago. And every government has basically tinkered with it since. And, you know, there's a sort of internal contradictions now in it and so on. So it needs a bit of a root canal. And that's basically what the government is saying. So there's some kind of short-term, there's two phases. We're doing a short-term fix for a couple of immediate needs, especially to get some houses built, because it's kind of getting in the way of that. And then we're also taking a very big picture review and saying, well, actually, let's go back to why we have this thing. Is it fit for purpose? You know, what's, you know, kind of changed in environmental and planning law over the past 30 years? What international examples are there? You know, and take much more of a first principles look at it. And so I'm actually really excited about that, because I think that it gives us the chance to kind of reset the whole sort of basis of environmental law in New Zealand.
So in a procedural sense, because the Act now is giant, I've had friends that have tried to print it for exams and then thought, actually, no, that's going to cost me way too much.
Yeah.
So
a month's
how,
wages just in printing.
Yeah. What is the process? Is the idea that sections will be repealed as they've sort of done in the past, or is it a whole overhaul of the entire Act?
Well, to tell you the truth, I actually don't know that yet, and that's because it'll depend on the nature of the reform recommendations. So what we're doing is we're setting up a process to take a look at it from first principles, and then it will be as a result of that process that we look at precisely how the legislation will change, right? So it might be a full repeal and replacement at one level, or it might be, you know, just kind of major revisions to each of the sections in the Act. But that'll depend, I think, on the nature of the review. So we're not moving immediately to legislation. We're starting with this kind of first principles review.
And let's finally just move on to the Climate Leaders Coalition. Can you tell me a little bit about what the Climate Leaders Coalition is, how it started, and where it is now?
Yeah, so it's a group of the chief executives of a number of New Zealand businesses. There are about 110, I think, at last count, and they are basically committed to doing what they need to do in their individual businesses to bring their emissions profile down so that we're within 1.5 to 2 degrees of global warming. It's a really significant group because collectively those businesses represent 60% of New Zealand's total emissions profile. So you've got a very small group, 110 companies that collectively represent a very substantial majority of our total emissions, who are committed to reducing their emissions, which means if they succeed, then New Zealand will have reduced its emissions. So it's a very, very important group.
60% is an awesome percentage. It's a huge amount of people and amount of, people contributing to the emissions in New Zealand. What is sort of the plan going forward? Is it the plan to get more people on board? How are people going to be reducing emissions using the coalition?
Yeah, so they've got an array of things, and it sort of depends on where you join. So the very first businesses that were involved right from the get-go are the most advanced, which kind of, you know, makes sense. And what they're doing is the very first thing that everyone needs to commit to is at the very least measuring their emissions. So they've got to start putting in place information systems so they can work out what actually is going on in their company in terms of their emissions profile. And then the next step is to develop a what they call a science-based target. So you kind of work out based on, you know, the kind of global temperature target, what is it that my company needs to do? And then they start working on plans for what that looks like. And every company is different, right? So, you know, Fonterra are a member of this group and kind of make up a fairly large chunk of the total.
I can imagine.
and so, you know, as a result of their membership and the work that they've done while they've been members of the coalition, you know, you might have seen an announcement like that they've decided to bring forward by 11 years their no new coal policy. And so they're not going to be building any more coal-fired milk drying units. And they are starting to replace their existing coal-fired units with renewable energy, whether that's kind of wood chip or electricity or biomass and so on. So that, you know, really is as a kind of a result of, you know, the work that they're doing through the coalition and with the government.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.